The entertainment world has been transformed over the last few decades. For young people, entertainment no longer means TV and movies. They play games, browse social media, watch videos on TikTok or YouTube, while teachers complain that their students no longer have the attention span to even watch movies. Yesterday's entertainment is today's chore. This revolution has transformed adulthood as well. Yesterday's teen gamers are today's parents. Smartphones have put video games in the pockets of billions, and now close to half the global population, 3.6 billion people, play video games, according to the market research agency Newzoo. That includes a grandmother playing Candy Crush on her mobile, a father gaming on his work PC, a teen on his handheld, a kid playing on his console. The average video game player is 34 to 36 years old. 30% are over 50. This revolution has brought once taboo subjects into mainstream entertainment. Playing games about demons and the occult, or robbing banks and killing cops, is the new normal. Hundreds of millions do it. Horror movies rarely break into the top of the box office charts, yet games with horror themes are among the best performing. Video games are transforming childhood, family life, and interpersonal relationships. Yet few are awake to the new dangers this has brought. With 212 million Americans playing and 96% saying they view video games as beneficial, it's been called America's favorite pastime. But are video games really beneficial? Could you or your family be exposed to new dangers thanks to this new pastime? Let's look at the answer on today's Trumpet World. Just like the TV and movie industry, many video games come with poisonous themes. Violence, horror, pornography, criminality. They bring stranger danger into the home of millions of kids, opening them up to sexual exploitation from the comfort of their own bedrooms. These risks are real and worth knowing about, yet there are also popular video games that avoid many, if not all, of these risks. But even these fail to avoid perhaps the greatest video game danger of them all, the theft of time. A 2024 Pew survey concluded that on average, each American aged 15 to 19 years old spends 80 minutes per day gaming. A separate study found that for boys, this figure is close to 3 hours a day. Over the course of their teenage years, that would amount to about 6,000 hours. Considering that most boys start gaming before age 13 and continue after age 18, the average young man has probably spent more than 10,000 hours gaming. Malcolm Gladwell famously observed that 10,000 hours of focused practice is roughly the required time to achieve world-class mastery in a particular skill. I mean, think of what world-class masters could have been produced with all of that time. There's clearly something very addictive about even the most benign seeming of games. And it's leading to a new global pandemic. Analysis of hundreds of studies conducted worldwide suggests that around 2 to 3% of the world's population has what has been termed a gaming disorder. They're so addicted to games that for a period of 12 months, other activities including sleep, eating, personal hygiene, work, and time with others was being pushed out. Generally, those diagnosed with gaming disorder are playing at least 8 to 10 hours a day. Another study estimated that 8.6% of those aged 9 to 21 were addicted to video games. Similar numbers of boys and girls say they play video games, but boys spend longer playing and are 2 to 3 times more likely to be addicted. In 2022, the World Health Organization warned that around 1 in 6 school-aged boys worldwide showed signs of problematic gaming. What does that look like? Well, consider some examples. Consider the teen for whom Roblox and Minecraft became all he and his friends talked about. Then it became all he wanted to do. His homework was late, then not done at all. Then he stopped doing chores. He started skipping class. He dropped out of school. Then games really took over. Confident that Britain's generous welfare state would take care of every need, he didn't look for a job, didn't pursue education. Video games became his life. That's just one real-life example. There are many others. Consider a man much older, married, with kids, but having a tough time making ends meet and things are getting stressful. Fed up with arguing with his wife, he retreated to his computer to play video games for hours a day. all of the family's problems, well, they're now his wife's problems, and he's escaped to a virtual reality. There are potentially millions of people like this. I was talking to somebody who helps at a local school recently, and she's working with a class of 7 to 8 year olds that they grew up, they learned to walk and talk kind of during the COVID era. They're used to living life through screens. They have a tough time off screens, just holding simple conversations or sitting still, but they're very good at video games. And what really shocked me was the class's favorite game, the one that most of these kids were going back and playing at 7 or 8 years old, is Call of Duty, a first-person shooter that's in theory only available for players aged 18 or over. And this really is a global pandemic affecting millions. And if anything, the figures from the studies I quoted earlier may be too low because these, well, A, they generally rely on people answering questions about their own behavior. And what studies and experts that work with people with video game addictions have found is especially prevalent with this particular addiction is those that are addicted severely underestimate the amount of time and how addicted they are to video games. They severely underestimate how much it's taking over their lives. So if you're relying on self-supported statistics, it's generally going to severely undercount. But also these studies put quite a high bar on what they consider a disorder or addiction. I mentioned this analysis that went over hundreds of studies on gaming and concluded that 2-3% of the global population had a gaming disorder. You know, they didn't measure that purely by number of hours played. They measured it in other ways, you know, how much it took away from other activities. But they did say that generally those with that diagnosis were playing for around 8 to 10 hours a day. So somebody playing for 5 hours, 6 hours a day of video games, that's a lot of video games each week, and they would not be counted in these studies. Another study found that 41% of teen gamers in the US said they experienced sleep problems due to their gaming. And again, that's 41% of teen gamers. You start to look at, well, most of those with the problems are boys, and you start to see that potentially video games is growing to the point that it is a major problem for most teenage boys and many young men. As gaming is becoming more popular, the world of video games, how they're funded, how people pay for them and use them is also changing rapidly. You think a decade or two ago, video games were largely one-off purchases. You spent $50 or however much it is, you had your game. Now there's a lot more options available for developers. You can play games for free, with that being funded by ads. Many games out there will give you a little per day for free to try and grab you in, but then if you want to have more content, you have to pay for it. Others work on a subscription model. You pay a little bit each month. Microtransactions, where you can play the game, but then just a dollar or two will unlock extra game bonuses, are very common. And even more, the more traditional you buy a game and you own it approach, well, that now uses expansions and game passes very heavily to generate more cash. A game is less a fixed product and more an ever-changing experience. And that makes life harder for parents. Vetting a game once no longer cuts it. A later update could make it a whole new ball game, literally. But the biggest result of this shift has been an increase in games' addictiveness. With revenue coming from ads or subscriptions or microtransactions, more time playing very directly equals more cash. Much more so than in the days where if you liked a game, you bought it and you paid once, and it didn't make any difference to the developer whether you spent an hour, 10 hours, 100 hours, 1,000 hours on it. They got the same amount of money from you. Now developers are much more incentivized to keep you hooked. The Conversation described this change in 2018, writing, "The video game industry has transformed from a group of backyard innovators to an industry of multi-billion dollar companies, hiring psychologists, neuroscientists, and marketing experts to turn customers into addicts. The latest trend is the creation of whales, people so addicted to games that they spend their entire life savings to keep playing." The study on whales is fascinating and disturbing. A lot of these kind of mobile video games with these new payment elements, they'll make most of their money from a small percentage of highly addicted players. So the payoff from getting somebody addicted to their game is huge. And so that is exactly what they do. Law professor Alison Caffarone argued in the Duke Law and Technology Review that the way that video game companies work to make their games addictive, potentially they could be held liable for that. They could be guilty of civil battery. She argues that many of these companies are pretty similar to cigarette manufacturers in that they work to keep their customers addicted while hiding the research behind all that from them. She wrote, "It is an open secret in the gaming industry that video game developers are hiring scientists and behavioral psychologists to engineer games that trigger physiological changes in a brain, a concept known as neuroplasticity, with the purpose of addicting the games' users." She talked about the way that developers try to overstimulate dopamine production in the brain, and that it brings the dopamine production to a level similar to stimulant drugs, and that it can nearly shut down the prefrontal regions. And every few years, new mechanisms, often based off the gambling world, are brought in to get people hooked. The right techniques, the right hook, can bring in billions. Another major change that has come to games over the last decade or so is that now we live in a world where most devices are connected to the internet, and so gaming is becoming a less of a solitary thing and much more something that's done with communities online. Voice or text chat is built into most games, and now a growing number of teens no longer meet up with friends after school. They get together virtually. Players aged 7 to 70 can chat together in multiplayer games from around the world. And that shift may look positive, but for many, it adds to the addictions. Kids fear becoming virtual pariahs if they're not allowed to join in with whatever the latest most popular video game is among their friends. There's also something about the anonymity or lack of face-to-face contact that comes from using a headset or chatting that brings out the worst in some people. Researchers from Offenburg University in Germany studied chats in 120 games of the online shooter Valorant. They reported that 80% contained profanity, 26% general verbal abuse, and 14% contained sexual comments or sexual insults. Women being harassed in gaming platforms has become a major problem, but there's an even greater danger to kids. UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, wrote that in many ways the gaming environment provides an ideal setting for grooming. Offenders often use multiple platforms simultaneously to contact young people, starting chats on public platforms and moving to more private or encrypted platforms later. Moving before platforms is a way for offenders to fly under the radar and enable abuse. One of the most frightening pieces of news on this subject comes from the 764 Network, a group that the FBI put out a bulletin first in September 2023, warning that they deliberately target minor victims on publicly available messaging platforms to extort them into recording or live streaming acts of self-harm and producing child sexual abuse material. This is a group that actively tries to connect with young children using games and gaming-linked message boards and then abuses them online. Here are some bits from recent documentaries on this.
The internet cult 764, which is known to do things so horrific that they are classified as a terrorist organization by the US government. Right now, every single FBI field office is hunting for the cult leaders, and there are more than 250 ongoing FBI investigations. This is truly an unending rabbit hole, and it reveals what may be the most depraved and evil organization ever born from the internet.
What it is it's this loosely connected community of people on various platforms. They lure young people from Discord or Telegram or even Roblox, bring them into online spaces that glorify violence, mass shootings, gore. Just there are videos of people who get shot and who are dying, and it desensitizes these young people and then glorifies that act and gets them to actually harm themselves or others.
It's described as an extremist network using various platforms to prey on vulnerable children here and around the world.
The FBI is now warning parents of a new modern-day domestic terrorist group labeled 764 that they say is targeting and exploiting children online.
Network originally came together based on the activity of this young man, and he started this child sexual predator network on the Discord gaming channel back in 2021.
What I refer to as modern day terrorism in America, 764 crimes that involve harming our children by going after them online, causing self-mutilation, suicide, sexual abuse and steering them in the wrong direction.
13-year-old Jay Taylor loved crafting.
See crochet all over the place. This is beautiful.
It's what drew him to join online groups like Discord to make friends as he struggled with his mental health after COVID.
We knew there were bad people on the internet, period, when we had those conversations.
And you tried to limit it.
Oh, yeah. It was locked down.
We did all the things that are available to us, right?
But that didn't stop an online network of extreme predators known as 764 from reaching Jay anyway and allegedly pushing him to do the unthinkable. Take his own life.
They took advantage of Jay's loneliness and his kindness, and then they completely preyed on his insecurities.
The goal of 764, to unleash chaos.
And that's just one twisted organization. How many loners out there are looking to prey on kids? And some of the biggest chat dangers revolve around games that market themselves to children. One of these is Roblox, a game with nearly 90 million active daily users. The developers claim that half of all American kids under age 16 play Roblox every month. 40% of its users are under age 13. It's marketed as being safe for kids, and millions of parents trust it. Rather than being one specific game, Roblox is more of a platform and allows people to make their own games in the platform and have other people come in and play those. And it allows children as young as 5 to kind of wander around virtually and chat to anyone they encounter. Now, if you're a parent, think, would you allow your 5-year-old to wander around town and talk to any stranger without you being there, without you seeing who they're talking to or being able to hear that conversation? You know, even if you were even if you were guaranteed their physical safety, they wouldn't be kidnapped or anything like that, you still wouldn't let them just wander around and talk to anyone. Nearly every parent on the planet, I think, would know better than to allow that. Yet millions permit exactly that through the virtual world. A report from Revealing Reality last year found that strangers accessing Roblox could talk publicly with 5-year-olds. They could chat privately with those aged 13 or older. The authors of that study set up an account as a 10-year-old, and they found that their characters in Roblox could visit rooms designed to mimic hotel rooms with characters dressed in suggestive outfits gyrating on a bed. They said that age verification measures were easily circumventable and that kids were being exposed to a whole lot of inappropriate content on this. The Guardian reached out to its readers about Roblox around the same time, and they wrote that they received stories that include that of a 10-year-old boy who was groomed by an adult he met on the platform and a 9-year-old girl who started having panic attacks after seeing sexual content while gaming. Last year, US authorities arrested 6 people on charges of using Roblox to sexually exploit children. That's just one pretty seemingly innocent seeming video game. But there's a lot that are very much not so innocent. And most will start with tamer games, but then they can be quickly drawn in to many, many of the ample darker options. One of the things about these darker options as well, though, is they are massively profitable and massively popular. These are not rare. The absolute most extreme of games tend to be fairly rare and niche. But there is some very horrific content in like the most popular games as well. Minecraft is the most profitable game of all time. It's rated as appropriate for players as young as 10 in the US for its cartoonish violence, blockish monsters. Number 3 on the list is Wii Sport, rated as suitable for all ages. There's almost nothing objectionable about the kind of the actual content there. But 2nd on the list is Grand Theft Auto 5. 2nd on the list of most profitable games of all time. It's rated for aged 18 plus in the US. It offers players a world where they can rob banks, fight the police, murder rivals, and then hire prostitutes to regain their health points and kill them again to get their money back. When the game was released in 2013, it became the fastest-selling entertainment product in human history, earning $800 million on its first day. What does that say about mankind, that this is our fastest-selling entertainment product in history? It's earned an estimated $10 billion in total, including hundreds of millions annually for its online version, and that doesn't include the hundreds of millions made by previous versions of that same game. When you look at the themes, many revolve around shooting opponents across various different time frames and settings. Fantasy, magic, monsters, and even demons are common themes. Elden Ring, for example, was the second best-selling game of the year in 2022. It won a lot of awards, very much a mainstream game, and in it, players fight undead monsters, cast spells, and summon spirits to help them. In 2023, Hogwarts Legacy, set in the wizards and magic universe of Harry Potter, was the best-selling game in the US. And the whole industry seems designed to draw people towards the darker themes. Minecraft, for example, looks like an online version of Lego. Yet, some popular editions of the game allow players to build a portal to the Nether, a burning hell-like dimension populated by ghosts, skeletons, and fire spirits. But it's still all in a childish, blocky style. And it's perfect for guiding young people gradually towards games like Elden Ring, with its much more real-like graphics and summoning demons, etc. These are just the popular mainstream games. You dive into the world of more niche games, and you can find just about anything. A tormented soul within the depths of hell, a grieving father sadistically killing girls to reanimate his daughter's corpse, a worker in a morgue trying to trap demons in the correct body before incinerating them. Surprising number of these niche games have you play as deranged mass shooters trying to kill as many as possible. Another common theme is players discovering the world that they know is not real. There's a lot of pornographic or sexual games there as well. And these darker games are not the only temptation that chronic players of more innocent titles could be drawn towards. Computer gaming means a lot of time spent on the computer. And that can be a portal to a host of other dangers. A 2021 study, for example, found individuals with problematic gaming habits were more likely to have problems with online gambling, online shopping, and online pornography. A 2015 study also found that those with video game addictions were much likelier to compulsively view pornography, though they also found that there was a class of gamers who became so obsessed with games they lost interest in everything else, including pornography. The gaming to gambling pipeline is well paved and a powerful example of the way that video games can draw people more deeply into other online addictions. One way that developers have learned from the gambling world is through mechanisms known as loot boxes. In Roblox and other games, players are rewarded with virtual containers that open to reveal a random in-game reward. And opening them is generally accompanied by animations that mimic a slot machine. And often these, you know, you can get these boxes in-game, but you can also spend real money to buy these boxes and then open them and see what they contain. Counter-Strike is a series of multiplayer shooters, and it was one of the pioneers of the loot box technique. Their loot boxes are now enabled players to get unique skins or decorations and colors for their guns. Valve, who own Counter-Strike, they promise players all the illicit thrills of black market weapons trafficking without any of the standing around in darkened warehouses getting knifed to death. They set up a store for people to trade these skins, with Valve taking a cut of the transactions. And by one estimate, Valve sold 1.9 billion of these loot boxes. They made billions of dollars from this. And this is a virtual slot machine that gives you a random reward that could be worth pennies or could be worth thousands. I mean, isn't this just online gambling? Well, not according to US regulators, because Valve doesn't give you a way to trade those skins for real-life cash. You can buy the loot box for cash, but once you've got the skins, you have to trade them for other skins within Valve's marketplace. But you can go to a third-party website and sell the skins for real cash there. Outsourcing that simple step allows them to sidestep gambling restrictions in most countries. In France, they've got a few additional hoops to jump through to get around that. And it turns out, piggybacking off video games is a great way to get kids addicted to gambling. And that also getting kids addicted to gambling is very profitable. You know, kids may not have not much money, but they don't have much life experience. They don't have as much self-control. They can often get access to mom and dad's credit card. So it's easier to turn kids into problem gamblers than it is adults. And it's problem gamblers and addicts that casinos make most of their money on. 70% of those involved in Counter-Strike gambling got started underage. You generally don't need any ID to get started. These casinos often don't check at all, or they check only when you try to take your winnings out. After you've done all your gambling, only then do they check your ID. And you could think, well, this is pretty niche. This is one type of game and then gambling based on loot boxes in this one type of game. How profitable could this really be? One rough estimate concluded that the combined revenue from all the Counter-Strike casinos online was twice the revenue of the biggest mainstream online casino. And that's the casino ecosystem for just one game. There are other casinos that can cater for other games. You know, kid-friendly Roblox. It has the same loot box mechanism that Counter-Strike has, and you can find videos of kids using this to gamble. And there's even third-party casinos that focus on Roblox. And all of this money, it feeds a network then of streamers and influencers. These are people who, well, they play the video games for hours, but they record themselves doing it. And they play that video online. People can watch it live. And many people will stream their game playing for fun. Some make a little extra spending money by doing this. And then the online casinos come in with truly life-changing amounts of money. Some of these influencers have talked about being paid around $5 million a year to advertise casinos. These are ordinary people struggling to afford rent, and suddenly a casino comes along and offers them enough cash to buy houses outright. And so then they're like, yeah, okay, well, let's do this. And so kids who tune in to try and get some tips on how to beat their friends in Counter-Strike are then persuaded to sign up to casinos. And this is just one example that, you know, knowing the demographic, as YouTube kind of shows us, of those watching Trumpet World, one game that you've probably never heard of involves huge numbers of people, young and old, watching people post videos talking about this game. They then spend a lot of time playing that game, getting addicted to the game, spending real money on loot boxes within the game, then learning to gamble through online casinos based on the game. And it's a billion-dollar industry. And that's just one example of how people can get drawn more deeply into other addictions, the way that video games can serve as a gateway. And because of this gateway effect, I think for most people, the more mainstream games are the most dangerous. Parents are put at ease by family-friendly content, and some of them, well, in-game chat might be more limited, and so they'll consider it safe. But it starts gamers down a road that can lead them to addiction and more extreme titles and then other addictions online. And after decades in development, video game addiction is multi-generational now. Fathers want to share with the kids the games they grew up playing. And for them, while limiting their kids' gamings or condemning that or banning it, well, that would condemn their own prized hobby. They don't want to do it. But look at the fruits of a society addicted to video games. You know, these games can seem more fun than anything else, yet a generation saturated in this fun is more depressed than ever. In 2023, 40% of US high schoolers said they were persistently sad or hopeless. Nearly a third of them said they'd felt so sad or hopeless almost every day for two or more weeks in a row that they stopped doing their regular activities. A quarter of British kids aged 16 to 24, I guess that would be adolescents, they have a mental health disorder. With online chats and team video games, today's young people are the most connected generation in history. They're also the loneliest. A 2018 survey of 55,000 young people aged between 16 and 24 found that 40% said that they were lonely often or very often. A study published earlier this year tracked 5,000 US adolescents for 4 years, and they showed that those who showed signs of video addiction were at greater risk of suicidal behavior and thoughts and symptoms of depression. This is a plague on society. Now, not all of the problems among young people are the results of the video game. Social media, for example, has played a major role. And both boys and girls have been caught up with both of these modern addictions and curses. In general, social media is harming more women, while video games is more of a trap for men. There's major exceptions to that, though. But video games, they're a mirage. They promise virtual fun, virtual friendship. They provide constant thrills, immersive entertainment, the illusion of accomplishment. You know, you've just stormed a beach at Normandy. You've become the mafia kingpin of Los Angeles. You've saved the world. You've got the girl. You've done this all from the comfort of your bedroom at 2 o'clock in the morning. And you can do it again and again and again. Real accomplishment is a lot more rewarding, but it's a lot harder. And it feels less epic. You know, finishing a book, learning how to play Chopin's Prelude in A major, learning how to sketch or draw something without it looking weird, that takes much more time. The video games and the instant appeal so much of the time win out. And yet, the virtual accomplishment never seems to fulfill in the long run. And the result is thousands of hours of wasted potential and a generation of depressed, lonely teens. Video games have proven a perfect trap for millions. A wide range of seemingly child-friendly games draw people in when they're young, and then they spend tens of thousands of hours on something that is ultimately a worthless pursuit that provides no long-term satisfaction. The idea of gaming in moderation becomes a trap for many. You know, I can use this to relax a little, like I would any other entertainment. There's no harm there, or for parents, video games, they're the easy way to keep kids quiet. Well, surely a little gaming can do no harm. Well, there's a lot of other relaxational activities that have more benefits and have fewer downsides. But the bigger danger is that for many, video games are so addictive that they can't keep it in moderation. In so many cases, they take over. They've become the only thing a person finds enjoyable or wants to think about. A little bit of gaming can seem innocent, but the evils are abundant. The tens of thousands of hours wasted, the millions pulled away from productive activities, the millions robbed of ambition, the desire to succeed, of real accomplishment in life, the relationships destroyed, the relationships never began, the millions drawn into violent and demonic games or into pornography or online gambling, the kids neglected, the wasted lives. And there's a critical hidden reason for all these negative fruits from video games. Regardless of game designers' intentions, there's another entity that knows human minds better than anyone else and is thrilled to be successfully addicting millions of children, men, and women to video games. The Bible describes a very real spirit world. Satan the devil is described as this world's god. Ephesians 2 and verse 2 calls him the prince of the power of the air, influencing minds through moods, attitudes, and emotions. And many have recognized his evil influence behind games focused on death, crime, zombies, and evil spirits. Can you recognize it behind games that seem more benign? We live in a world where few people have time to go to church, to pray, to study the Bible. There's so much else to do. And then video games don't just consume time, they consume attention. They draw addicts into a fake world that becomes all they can think about. It robs them of their potential to succeed in the real world and to succeed spiritually. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flory wrote, "Man's potential is so stupendous. Satan is very jealous of our future and will do anything to prevent us from fulfilling our potential." Video games might be one of Satan's most powerful attacks on young men right now. God created man physical, but with incredible spiritual potential. And this physical life is designed to allow mankind to build character, to prepare for that spiritual future. Herbert W. Armstrong called a spark of ambition the vital ingredient that has been missing in most human lives. And someone may have ambition only for worldly success, but that still gives God something to work with. Mr. Armstrong wrote that such ambitious fellows, of course, may not have right goals. They may not know the real purpose of life or the true way of life. And they may be energetically pressing on only towards more vanity and a striving after wind. But at least they are mentally alive and not dead. And once circumstances do shake them and bring them to themselves and humble them and open their minds to the true values, they are already in the habit of exerting enough energy so that, turned at last in the right direction, something is really accomplished. And this is the target here. Video games are preventing people from developing ambition, exerting energy, experiencing the thrill of real achievement. Achievement in business, sports, academics. I mean, that is empty. That is striving after wind without God. But God plans to offer salvation to all those currently ignorant or uninterested in the Bible. He can still use those experiences in developing their spiritual, holy, righteous character later down the line. Video games aim to prevent man from coming close to fulfilling his full potential physically or spiritually. Video games can be immensely appealing. They promise entertainment more intense than anything man has ever developed. Yet they rob people of what is most valuable and fulfilling: their time, their relationship, their accomplishments, and their spiritual potential. And could there be any greater danger, any worse addiction and pandemic? As the world embraces gaming, be different. Take a stand for yourself, for the young men in your life. Resist the pull of video game addiction. And if you want to know more about how to do that and how to make the most of your life, especially as a young man, as this is an issue that tends to affect young men, or to give to the young men in your life or the boys that you're raising, we have a free book, Biblical Manhood, that is full of practical information, stirring information about how to do this. There's so much in there about how to practically improve your day-to-day life, work towards God's vision of true masculinity. You can read it online on our website, thetrumpet.com, or we would, again, be very happy to send you your own free print copy that you can study, that you can mark up and highlight, or give to someone. So you can get that, again, on our website, thetrumpet.com. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for engineering and production to Matthew Friesen. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave a comment below, or you can get in touch with us at trumpetworld@thetrumpet.com. We'd be very happy to hear from you. We'll be back with our regular Week in Review show on Friday. Until then, keep watching your world.